Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
Those who are present this morning in the meditation hour, I just explained what is meant by meditation. The meditation in two words is to direct your attention, which is the outward expression of soul, from all outside and from all the body below, take it to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes. Just the process of death. Man, when dying, he does not recognize anybody. His attention is withdrawn from outside. Now further, the lower body is benumbed and the attention is upward until the eyes are upward, to the back of the eyes. So that was practical, sitting was given. And most of you people did know that you are not the body, and you also did open the inner eye, single eye, to see one phase of God into expression, which is light. God is light. The symbols of which we use in our meditations, in our temples, in our outer ways of worship. Now, each kernel has its own keshe. This attention was the outward expression of the soul, which is at the seat at the back of the eyes. So it was a casing which you are carrying. This is called man-body. So God made man, this outer casing, with equal privileges. All born the same way, all have got the outer form the same, two eyes, two hands, two ears, mouth, inner constitution also the same. So man has got heart, lung, stomach. Every morning, municipality takes of the filth of the body. No high, no low. So you find, so man has three aspects. It has the physical body, it has intellect, and it is conscious entity. Physically, we advance wonderfully. We know how the body is made, how it can be kept fit, how the diseases arise, how those can be remedied. We have got so many patches for that. Ayurvedic is the oldest. Yunani system comes next. Then allopathy, naturopathy, homeopathy. There are so many systems which help us to keep our body fit. We have got intellect. We have dwelt also intellectually wonderfully. That is before you all. We can go around the world in hours. We have reached the moon, another planet we are trying. We can hear from thousands of miles through the radio. We can also see through television who is speaking. So with all these intellectual advancements and the physical advancements, we are not happy. The reason why we have known little, practically nothing about our own self, which is conscious entity, the outward expression of which is attention, as I explained to you this morning. So masters come, they say, God is spirit, and the spirit of God is in man. So, what is spirituality? That I have to put before you now. Spirituality is knowing oneself and knowing God. Man's body is a wonderful house we live in which there are so many apertures. With all these apertures open, we cannot run away out of it. Body works so long as we are in the body. And we are in the body controlled by some power which keeps us in the body. So man's body is considered to be the highest in all creation. Next to God, angels were asked to bow down before the man body when it was built. So we are drops of the ocean of all consciousness, but with all that we also have the same sense as that of God, and that God whom we can have to meet is also within this man body. With so much privilege, we are not happy. The reason why, our soul, the outward expression of which is identified with the body, outgoing faculties and enjoyment. So my soul that we have forgotten our soul. Body is made of matter and world is also made of matter. Soul is eternal, but the body which is dwelling and which is working is changing. Every moment of life and the world outside also is changing at the same speed at which our body is changing. As we are identified with the body and with the world outside, this all appears to be stationary, which is optical illusion. If you like to bring home this point, take example of a boat in which humans are rowing down the stream. Boat is rowing down the stream, the speed of the water and the speed of the boat is the same. And those who are sitting in the body, they are also flowing on the same road. Then the boat to the water appears to be stationary and boat also stationary. If for a while they look to the shore of the river, most of we are going down this stream. So this illusion, optical illusion, we have to come out of that. Only we will see the world in its right perspective. World is changing. Those who came, kings are the poor, happy or the unhappy, all who came to the body, they after all left the body. But under great illusion, when they came to know at the time of death that now we are leaving the body. This body is the first companion that we have with us when entering the world. But when we go, this body does not accompany us. And all those things which have come in our connection, how can they go? those who got, they are out of this illusion, they tell us the world passing, time and time waits for no man. The day is arriving when you will have to leave the body. So we have been identified with the world outside so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. Now the only remedy is we should know how to leave the body at all. To masters who solve the mystery of life, they gave out, "Man, know thyself, who you are, what you are. You are not the body, you are having the body. You are not the intellect, but you have the intellect. You are not the outgoing faculty, but you have them for you. And you are conscious entity, conscious being. How to know that? How to come out of this grand illusion? For that this morning was submitted to you how the soul, the outward expression of his attention can be withdrawn from outside and take up about the body consciousness, and you would have found there that you are not the body. And further peep, you add into the beyond, and most of you did see light of God, of the lower scale of course. So how to come out of this delusion is by self-analysis, not by feelings or emotions or drawing inferences. They're all subject to error. Seeing is above all. So all this, what it appears to be, is all illusory. It's changing like anything. And we come to know about it when we really rise above body consciousness. So this is what men have, you see. Then what is spirituality? I have just placed before you. Spirituality, God is spirit. And spirit of God is in man. God is all consciousness, and we are drafts of the ocean of that consciousness, environed by mind and matter. As I submitted just now, our soul is under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are dragged like anything but the outer enjoyments. We identify with it, we cannot differentiate. In theory we might, intellectually we might infer. Really we cannot see this right perspective unless we ourselves rise above body consciousness. The demonstration of which was given to you at the time. So spirituality is knowing who you are, what you are. What is your connection with the body? How long will it continue? After all, each man has to leave the body. What be our fate beyond? So this rising of our body consciousness, withdrawing our attention from outside and from the body below, rise up to come in contact with the Spirit of God, God into expression power, this truly means spirituality. So spirituality is no spiritism. Spiritism to be in contact with the lower groveling spirits which are left body. And it is no spiritualism. It is only come in contact with those souls who go a bit higher in the other world. You contact them through blankets and other things to get their messages. But they cannot give you messages more than they have attained already. They are no wiser than when they left your body. So that is not spirituality. And hypnotism also knows no spirituality. And mesmerism also, you people think the other way. So spirituality means self-analysis practically. A way out from the physical body into the beyond. How to do it? How can we separate our body from the entanglements of the outgoing faculties and attachment of the out of the world and the body below? This is, strictly speaking, spirituality. Now, I am coming to the casing side. Man has got bodies, physical bodies. Masters who came, they solved, they analyzed the man body, what it is composed of. Ultimately, they come to know what is that driving force which is carrying along the body. And that we are. We are controlling the faculty of the man body with the different departments of seeing, hearing, taste, smell and touch. So it is we on account of us that this body is working. When we withdraw, the body remains intact as it is, whole machine intact, but the driver is gone. And there is one thing more. We are also controlling the body. We cannot leave the body, although there are so many holes open. So masters come to give us a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness. And this process of leaving the physical body, rising to the beyond, coming in contact with that all-controlling power, is strictly speaking spirituality, what is called. So God, let us come out to the outer casing of it. God made man, as I told you, with the same privilege from God, no high, no low. And the masters who solved the mystery of life, whosoever met them, they were also succeeded in solving the mystery of himself. To know thyself, it is the first step. All masters, whether they came in the East or the West, all said so. Greek philosophers told the same thing in their Greek language. Gnothi theaton. Latin philosophers get in Latin, Gnosi Egyptian. Persian philosophers also said in Persian language, of course, the ultimate goal of all knowledge is to know God. And to know God, who can know God? God cannot be known by the outgoing faculty, mind or intellect. So, it is our own self, which is conscious entity, when it is liberated from the entanglements of mind and outgoing faculties by rising above it, only then we can know the old self which is controlling us in the body. Life knows the life. So when the master left the scene to keep their teachings alive, these religions, social bodies, what they are, came into existence. The purpose was very noble, that most of the people may derive benefit by joining those schools of thought, the labels of which we are now carrying. You see, as man, we are man. Later on, whatever labels we are carrying on the body, we are called by that. Some Hindus, some Mohammedans, some Christians, some Sikhs, some Jews, like that. If you look to a small child who is 2-3 years old, not more than that, if you ask him who you are, he opens his eyes, opens his mouth. He feels something conscious here. As he grows old, outer impressions find he has. Then he says, who you are? He says, I am Mr. Jan, I am Mr. Khan, I am Mr. Singh, I am such and such. When a more further impressions come into himself, then he says, I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am a Mohammedan, you see. I am an Indian, I am a Russian, I am American. Just see how far he has receded from the consciousness which a little child has. So it is the consciousness that we are. We are conscious entities. And that to be withdrawn from all outside and know ourselves so that we can run the machinery of the man body in outside world whenever we like. If not, we can withdraw from them. So such men, their bodies appear to be in the world, but their souls are in mouthpiece of God, contact with God. Their bodies appear to be entangled in the worldly affairs day and night, but whenever they want, they rise above body consciousness and travel into the beyond. That's the difference. As I told you this morning, with the average man and the one who has succeeded that way is a vast difference. We are at the mercy of the outgoing faculties and enjoyments. We are dragged like anything, whether we wish it or not. But one who has, with the grace of some adept in the body, he has given him a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness, he rises above the outgoing faculty. The seat of the soul is at the back of the eyes. And all outgoing faculties have their place below, ears, eyes, nose, down. These 5 decades, lust, anger, greed, taste and touch, they have got their centers to work. Lust attacks from the eyes, through the eyes. Anger has a boost when you hear. Taste through the tongue and smell through the nose. So these, those who are just competent to have their feet there at the back of the body, at the back of the eyes, he is competent to use any of the effects at his will and pleasure. So this is what the difference between the average man and the other man. So religions, I told you, that were raised with a very noble purpose so that many people may derive benefit therefrom by joining it. So long as they are practical people, people derive the full benefit of that. For want of them, the same formations raised with noble purpose stagnated. Further deterioration came up. Masters, they come from time to time when they see this plight of the world, they say, dear children, know that who you are. Again they revive that very truth, which is the basic teachings of all masters, and they bring home these things to them. So now soul, as I told you, is of the same essence as that of God. God is all consciousness and soul is conscious entity. So physically, you see, we are all one, with equal privilege from God. As soul, we are also of the same essence as that of God. We are all children of God, we are all brothers and sisters in God. And the power that we worship as God so, by so many names, is the same which is controlling all universe and controlling us in the body too. So as man, as soul, as whom we worship, we are all already one. The unity exists, but we have forgotten. There are thousands, luminous people praying God, bearing different labels on the man body. But to whom they bow down? To God, who is the controlling power of all creation. First they have to know themselves. So like archers, you see, there are many archers, but the point, target is the same always. Whether you have the outer labels of one religion or the other that show in which school, particular school of thought you are taken up to solve the mystery of life. This is basic teachings given by all masters in their own language, of course. That school is better, is appreciated, from which many students come out successful. Not that whose buildings are very grand, whose playing grounds are very beautiful, whose dresses and students are very magnificent, but where from many turn out, get highest degree. So as I told you, all this plight came up for want of practical people. So masters always tell us what they bring us. They say, first of all, that they are the maker of all this universe. He also made your body in the womb of the mother. So, Master says the same thing. They say, love God and all those whom God has created. So all scriptures, when you see, look through them, they enjoin this thing. God is love, and love is God. Tenth Guru says, hear ye all, lend me your ears, I tell you the truth. Whether you bear the labels of one school or the other, the way back, to God is also through love. God is love, and love is innate in our souls. Now, instead of that love being had a boost by coming in contact with all love which is controlling us in the body, that being attached to the outside things, which is termed attachment. Love knows giving, and attachment means squeezing, dragging something, usurping something for one's own self. Vast difference between the two. So they bring the religion of love. Kabir also, all masters I say, Kabir says, well, love the man body is the only golden opportunity in which you can love God. How? When you are brought in contact with God, which is controlling you in the body, the outer expression of which is light and sun. So if someone, we have got love for the world, which is called attachment, that's the reason we go where we are most attached. In man body, we could have contacted God within us, which is all love. Had that become the ruling passion, then naturally after death we would have gone to the lap of the Father. The reason of our coming again and again ever since we were separated from God, we have not yet been successful to go back to our home. So our Master tell us like that. All those who are on the spiritual way, St. Paul said, what you should serve one another with love.
So good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. Before we start, I just want to mention, if you need to increase the volume for the satsang, you can press star 4, and you can press it multiple times. The volume will continue to increase. You can press star 7 to decrease the volume, and again, you can press it several times. Okay, today the reader is Claire Stannard. Are you there, Claire?
Yes, I am, John.
Okay, carry on.
Today I'll be doing the second part of the talk, Search for Truth. It was printed in March 1969 edition of Satsang Desh. Now we take a hymn from Guru Arjan, the fifth in succession to Nanak. Let us see what he has to say in this context. This talk, too, is similar to the previous one from his immediate predecessor, Guru Ram Dass. In the bottom of my heart, there was a keen desire to meet my beloved. Somehow or other, the perfect master has graciously fulfilled my long-cherished desire. The question, once again, is of earnestness. Do we really need God? Sometimes we do ask for God. Even our intellect also, at times, feels the need for God. But does our mind want God? This is the crux of the problem. We ask for things with mental reservations only if they are of any use to us on the physical plane. On the other hand, the mind is entirely dyed in the color of the world. It has no time to think of anything else. Mind has a great potential in it. What the mind wants, it fervently prays for. At times, it even cries for it. God comes in only as the means for the satisfaction of his worldly desires. And day and night, one thinks of nothing else. This is the actual condition of our mind. You can search it for yourself. Do you sincerely wish for God? No. We want him only as a means to an end, the end being physical pleasure and comforts. Otherwise, God has no meaning for us. It is a question of demand and supply. If we actually wish God, the law of nature comes to our aid. Where there is fire, oxygen comes to its aid. All that we need is to put our tongue, intellect, and mind on one level. Such an attitude increases the mind force. Where the mind force is strong, nothing can stand in our way. We must be true to ourselves. And then whatever may be our wish shall be fulfilled. If our prayers are truthful and arise from the contented mind, then hearing them, God calls us to himself, nay, draws us on to him. What is a truthful prayer? It is one that springs equally from the mind, the intellect, and from the tongue. Otherwise, we are not true to ourselves and are deceiving ourselves and our God. Why are our prayers not granted? Because we ask amiss. To ask rightly what is necessary is the first condition. The second condition is that we should be contented with what we have and be grateful for them. Ingratitude is the greatest evil. What has God given us? All that we need, and much more. Have we ever offered a thanksgiving prayer for what he has done and the bounteous gifts supplied by him? If we fulfill these conditions of truthfulness and contentment with a sense of gratefulness, he would not deny us anything for which we may happen to wish. If we ask for God from God with a sincere mind, he would never deny us. On the contrary, he would draw us unto himself. He is the knower of our hearts and readeth us correctly. We cannot hide anything from him with all our cleverness and cunningness. He sees right through us what is passing in our mind and acts accordingly. We cry for bread, we cry for our losses, but we never cry for God. Of Namdev, the calico printer saint, it is said that once the balcony of his home crashed down. His home folk asked him to call a carpenter to carry out the necessary repairs. The devotees, as you know, hardly remember such things. He went out as usual and sat in the sweet remembrance of the Lord. He forgot himself. He forgot the world around him. He forgot the balcony and the carpenter. In the evening, he got up from his meditation and went home. His people asked him if he had arranged with a carpenter to do the job. "I am sorry, I forgot all about it. I shall certainly call the carpenter tomorrow," he said. Some days passed away like this. Everyone at home felt annoyed and threatened him with dire consequences if he did not bring the carpenter the next day. "I shall certainly bring the carpenter tomorrow," he replied. Strange as it may seem, Namdev again forgot to get a carpenter. A man of God is always absorbed in God. How can he think of the world and the worldly things? They are of no consequence to him. Again in the evening, when he woke up from his trance, he felt ashamed. But there was no way to get out of the impasse. He sorrowfully waded his way back to his house, his home. God, foreseeing his sad predicament, had during the day gone to his house in the garb of a carpenter and set right the broken balcony. When Namdev reached home, he was dumbfounded to see the work. It was a piece of rare workmanship and had been done in an unusually short time. He could make out who the carpenter was. None but God's hand could do this miracle. A nightingale can alone understand a nightingale. The devotee knew that his God had done the job. He took courage and pressed on to his lane. The neighbors flocked around him and inquired the wages that he had settled with his carpenter for such a wonderful piece of work. He replied, "Love is the only wage that my carpenter demands." The next question was as to how the carpenter could be called. "My carpenter comes when one cuts himself completely from his family," he added. "You can now well understand the position. If you become his, he becomes yours. He then comes to you of his own accord without being called." Namdev was lost to himself in his devotion. He had never asked God to repair his balcony. God keeps the honor of his devotee for his name's sake. I would tell you of my own personal experience. It happened during the lifetime of my master, Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj. My son was seriously ill. He was hovering between life and death. The physicians apprised me of the critical condition of my son. They even asked me to be prepared for the worst. They advised me to take a few days' leave so as to be near my son's sickbed. The next day happened to be a Sunday. I was due to give a discourse at Amritsar. It was a duty assigned to me by my master. I got up at quite an early hour in the morning. The premonitory words of the physician were still ringing in my ears. I felt that life and death were in hands other than mine. What could I, after all, do? To carry out the behests of my master was, of course, in my hands. I decided to attend to my duty and let Hazur see to his. I accordingly left for Amritsar to play the role that had been allotted to me. The discourse was delivered as usual. The weather was hot and sultry. I finished my job at about 10 a.m. I left the auditorium an hour later. As I was halfway down from Biaz, I felt a strong urge to push on so as to have Hazur's darshan. I might have reached Biaz at 1:30 p.m. Hazur was taking his rest. Learning that I had come, he called for me upstairs. He sat up and inquired, "What about your son?" I replied, "He was ill and somewhat in a precarious condition, but I had to discharge the duty assigned to me. I could not do anything more, nor was it in my power to save him by remaining there." My words appeared to make Hazur quite anxious. For a while he sat in silence. I quietly said, "Hazur, whosoever thinks of you is relieved of all his worries. How is it that you are feeling so much for me?" He replied, "Kirpal Singh, you took the burden off your head, and I have to take it upon my shoulders. When you are so inclined to your duty, what else can I do? The scriptures tell us, the gracious Father hath so ordained whatever the Son asked for that hath to be granted. But what one should ask for? God or world?" Nanak tells us, "The humble Nanak simply asks for one thing. O Lord, plant thy lotus feet in my heart." This is what all the scriptures say. In the Holy Quran we have, "I shall grant unto man what he desires." So the only thing to be desired is an intense longing for the Lord. If we are sincere in our search, we shall certainly get him. Once a little toddler was sitting all alone in a room. His mother was in the kitchen. The milk can was on the fire before her. The child wanted to stand up but slipped and fell. Then he tried to pull himself up by supporting himself against the wall. His little hands did not find any catch hold and he fell again. Then he saw the door curtain and stretched out his hands to help himself. As luck would have it, the curtain itself slipped down the rod, and both came down upon him. In his helplessness, he began to cry piteously, calling his mother. No sooner than the mother heard his cry, she ran to the room without caring for the boiling milk and hugged him to her bosom. She took the baby and came back to the kitchen to attend to the milk, but it was too late to save the milk from spilling over. The child perhaps felt that he had known the trick of attracting his mother's attention. After some days, while sitting in the room, he again began to cry, "Mother, mother!" The mother could guess that he was idly indulging in a sing-song and did not run up. The child slowly came to the kitchen and inquired as to what the mother was doing. She replied that she was busy making dal. The child said that he had thought that she was perhaps preparing some dainty dish, much better than the milk, because she had not answered his call for a pretty long time. The mother replied, "My child, there was no anguish in your voice today." So you see, the question is one of inner craving. We crave for mundane things of the world and do not wish God. God only replies to the cry from the heart. He does not answer to our oral prayers. While we sit in worship, our mind is running after family affairs. Excuse me, we are not sitting in the temple of our heart, but are practicing idolatry. God would never come where there are so many idols to attract you and keep you busy. You may better compare the state of your mind with that of the awakened souls. Guru Arjan's heart is aflame with the love of God and is keenly in search of ways and means to find his beloved. The only way to find God is first to find means to the end. God cannot be found without the help of a God-man. When you desire God with all your heart and soul, he himself provides the means. It is said that the simple squeak from a contrite heart. It is said that the simple squeak from a contrite heart reaches God quicker than the loud and long prayers offered in public by boastful people. When God resides in all hearts, He knows even the tiniest vibrations therein. He is the soul of our soul and is not sitting in high heavens. We can deceive ourselves. We can deceive the people of the world, but we cannot deceive the great power in us. If you are sincere in your love for God, God would surely come to your aid. His grace is beyond measure, and he would put some God-man in your way. It is a great blessing to meet a really awakened soul. You cannot come across such a one unless God desires it so. We cannot even know a God-man as we cannot know God. A blind man cannot find a person with vision. The latter may take pity on the blind man and take him by the hand. When our inner eye has not yet been opened and we are sitting on the plane of senses, we cannot possibly see the human pole on which the higher power is at work. Apparently, the God pole looks like any of us, and we have no means to understand his inner greatness. Nanak, you know, was called a man with a perverted intellect. Why? Because people had not the eye to fathom God in him. A competent master is a rarity. The scriptures speak highly of a perfect master. It means that there are in the world masters who are imperfect and not fully competent to impart spiritual experience. The world is full of so-called teachers and self-styled masters. Christ warns us to be aware of false prophets and half-prophets. A perfect master is one who has experienced the self in him and also has the power to manifest the same in others. He who has seen God can make others see him. No one has seen God but the Son and those whom the Son may reveal. How to know such a fully awakened soul? He is not to be judged by the palatial buildings in which he dwells, or the huge congregations before him. The real test is that he should be able to give some practical demonstration of God power by momentarily lifting the soul from the level of the senses. You cannot test him on the level of the intellect, however hard you may try, even by close contact with him, maybe for a long time. The reality is in him, and he keeps it as a sacred trust from God. He would not go about making a show of it. He can be moved by your genuine and keen desire for God realization. And if you have God's name written in your forehead, he will certainly reveal the spirit and power of God in you. Ask and it shall be given. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. So it is a question of asking, seeking, and knocking at the door of a God-man. And secondly, the experience depends upon the life impulse that the God-man imparts. For life comes from life. Mere knowledge of the formulas from books or from so-called teachers will not help. It is the radiation that passes from eyes to eyes and works the miracle. One glance of grace from him is enough to serve the purpose. It is he who raises up and upholds our attention so as to give us the inner experience. In the times of Hazur, many learned persons conversant with scriptural texts would come and enter into idle discussion with the master. Hazur would simply inquire of them if they had any inner access, and if so, could they take others also into the realms within? This would naturally quiet them, for they had no such experience even for themselves. Once Katar Singh, a sightless philosopher, came to hear Hazur. After hearing the talk, the gentleman got up and said, "I am a great philosopher. I used to deliver rhetoric talks that would silence all opposition. After having heard your talk, I feel that I am just like a child collecting pebbles from the seashore, while the great ocean is lying unexplored before me." you would realize that there is a world of difference between a talk from a practical teacher and one from a learned person. The master's talk spontaneously flows from the depth of his heart and sinks deeply into the hearts of the hearers. The thoughts that descend from above without thinking are said to be flawless and perfect. Attend ye to the true testimony of the saints, for they speak out what they actually see within. I speak nothing on my own, but as my Father bids me, I do, St. John. Nanak, speaking of God's presence, says, I see my God as in full view. Saints speak with authority. This is the way of sages gifted with divine wisdom. They have love for all and enmity with none. They even love their enemies. Once the disciples asked Jesus as to how they should behave with the people, particularly with their enemies, Jesus explained, Ye have heard that it hath been said by Moses, Thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies and pray for them, that ye may be sons of your Father in heaven. You would realize that divine laws are given out according to the times and needs of the people. The Mosaic law was delivered to the people because they were hard of heart. With the change of times, Jesus modified the position as above. The really great persons wish well to everybody. Their love is all-embracing. Their hearts are large like a sea. They do not raise even their little finger against them who cavil and carp and speak ill of them. It is a pity that the world is full of people who forget themselves for the sake of belly. It is very rare that you will find a person who is really in search of God. Our temples and gurudwaras are crowded to suffocation. Thousands of people go there to attend the routine service. They listen quite attentively to the recitations and the talks over there, but just search their heart. Everyone has his personal motive for this kind of religiosity. Excuse me, we make a cat's paw of God. We do not want God for the sake of God. We must, therefore, learn to be true to ourselves. This is the first step and the most important step. God is great and gracious. He gives what we desire. If we want world, He would give us world, but not Himself. The process of world is long and unending. Have you realized as to what is the greatest hurdle in our way to God? We stand at the gate, blocking the way, and pray God to enter. How can He? We must step aside and make a way for Him. We must empty ourselves of all thoughts of the world so as to make room for Him. We have to wait and watch for Him. He comes like a thief in the night, and there is no hour fixed for His coming. God is not deaf. He knows what is passing in our hearts and acts accordingly. The law of God is good, just, and for our ultimate benefit. If we ask amiss, He would not grant us. We must learn to live in His will and accept His will, whatever it be. Therein lies our safety and security. We even do not know what to ask of Him and how to ask. The fault lies with us. Sometimes it so happens that our desires are fulfilled, and yet in the end things go wrong. It is then that we realize that we have asked something undesirable. Why not then pray God to give us that which He thinks the best, rather than to blame the stars if anything goes wrong? That is why an awakened person has a ruling passion for God alone. All things work to the good of those who win the love of God. How can we do this? We even do not know where God is, and how can we reach up to Him? For this, we shall have to rise as high as he is. It is then that we can know him. God is very subtle and beyond the reach of our senses, our mind, and our intellect. We cannot see him with the eyes of the flesh. If we learn how to etherealize ourselves, we can come in contact with God into expression and thereby win his love. Now the question is one of finding a guru of the right type. On the one hand, we have gurus who simply profess themselves as such. By acting and posing as gurus, they make their living. We have nothing to do with gurus of this category. Then there are social teachers and preachers doing their work according to the set rules of the organizations to which they belong. Man is a social animal and cannot but live in society. The fundamentals of all social orders are almost similar enough. They tell us to have a clean living and chaste life of truthfulness and continence. This is something commendable. Social reformers can certainly help to raise society and social life of the people to a certain extent. But unfortunately, our reformers too, in course of time, grow narrow-minded and lose their elastic touch with the society, with the result that splinter groups grow within the society. This leads to splitting, friction, and unrest. So whatever they do something of a limited nature for a limited time. The good they do is not enduring. This is the second category of teachers, and we may class them teachers of society and worldly wisdom. They cannot be of any great help to us in self-realization and God-realization. For these objectives, we will have to search for another type of guru, the Satguru type, or when established in Sat, or truth. They are realized souls with a knowledge of and access into the realms beyond the range of the senses, the mind, the intellect, and the pranas, vital airs. They are teachers indeed, and hold in their hands the keys of heaven and hell and of the beyond. The gnarled sage Ashtavakar, who gave a practical experience of the inscape to Raja Janak, belonged to this category. He was the only rishi who not only professed but claimed to have realized his own self and was capable to make others realize likewise. India, as you know, was at that time at the zenith of its glory, full of sages and seers of different types and orders. But none could demonstrate God to the royal seeker after God, Raja Janak. The great sage Yajnavalkya could only give the king the theory of pravidya, or the science of the soul. So all we need is a perfect master for our instruction and guidance on the God way. The next question is as to where a perfect master is to be found. You should know that he is not tied down to any particular society or to any particular country. A man of spirit comes and goes like a free wind, and then God may choose any human pole as his fitting receptacle to work through. He may come as a cobbler like Ravidas, or as a cloth printer like Namdev, or as a weaver like Kabir. He may take his birth among Kshatriyas, or among Jat cultivators, as Dana Bhagat. He may appear in one country or the other, in east or in west, or anywhere in the world. Wheresoever God's light may appear, people like moths are sure to gather. He may come in a high-class family, or be born low. It matters little. But this much is certain, that if he himself is a man of realization, then alone you may expect some inner experience from him. We must pray then, day and night, for meeting a competent master. I would like to tell you one of my personal experiences. Even as a child, I had some background of my own. Every day I would take down a couplet from the Sikh scriptures. I would write it down and throughout the day would cogitate upon it. On one occasion, I took for my couplet something where stress was laid for contacting a real guru, maybe a sadhu, a sant, or a mahatma. This set me a-thinking. I began to pray to God to help me to a real guru so that I may derive full benefit in this very life and thus fulfill my long-cherished desire. Gradually, this became an obsession with me. I even wished that God may himself shower his mercy directly upon me as he did to Dhruva or Prahlad in bygone days. But now the times had changed. God's power could now be experienced only through the grace of some God-man. I was afraid that if I erred in my choice, my life would be wasted. For a long time I continued thinking like this. From time to time I had divine visitations. I always took the form of the holy man who used to visit me in my meditations as Nanak. In those very days I composed a poem in which I beautifully described the lovely features of the divine guide who kept guiding me all of these years from day to day on different planes. This state continued for about 7 years. It was only in 1924 that I happened to go to Biaz and met that visionary figure in the form of Hazur Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj. All I mean to say is that God listens to our prayers provided they are genuine, deep, and sincere. When I inquired from Hazur as to why he had taken so long a time to draw me to his lotus feet, he simply replied that it was the most opportune time to do so. I cannot help repeating that a God-man is not a man in the ordinary sense of the term. He is always a human pull on and through which the God power works. The power of God is pervading everywhere, and on the chosen human pull, it works on so many different levels. As a guru, he works on the physical level as any other worldly teacher would do. He joins in our joys and our sorrows. He may even shed tears with us in our distress. All this he does to develop our human nature and our faith in him. Inwardly, he remains as he is, unaffected and unconcerned with all our wheels and woes. Thus, on the human level, he acts as a perfect human being. But besides this, he is something more as well. When you leave the physical plane and transcend into the astral world, the guru now assumes the form of Gurudev and appears in his radiant form. When the disciple is able to manifest in him this radiant form of the master and starts communing with him, he becomes a guru Sikh. This radiant form of the master now becomes our guide on the inner planes and leads us to the feet of the Sat Purush. The power that merges in the Sat Purush is called Sat Guru. It is this power that works in the world on the human plane as a guru. This is why it is said, Sat Guru remains in his fullness. It means that he is fully manifested wherever he is, even on the human pole, but is not attached to the pole. Excuse me, we have not yet understood the real nature of Guru and his greatness. Like a little child, we presume to know him. What can a child know of his father and more so of the Heavenly Father? We know him only to the extent that he wishes us to know or reveals himself to us. The Guru is as incomprehensible and ineffable as God himself. We simply cannot know him on the human level of the intellect. I'll end there today. Thank you, Master.
Well, thank you, Claire, for the wonderful reading. Today we had 71 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.